Welcome back to Shatteringness. I am your host, Eddie Yetta. This program has been devoted for the past 3 years to those of you who are either coming to realize, have realized, or at least open to the realization that every human institution is corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. And that would be every human religious institution, spare none. That would be every political institution, spare none. That would be every military, save none. And so this program is yours. Should you wish to participate in it, you may listen, you may call in, you may challenge anything we have to say. And I'd particularly like it if you would challenge our regular contributor, Kirk, who is our resident artist and teacher, as Kirk continues to go through the words that are the most religious in the King James Bible. He began with the concept of praise, and we found that, no, there's not a single word written in Hebrew that can be translated praise in the religious sense of the word. Not one. And then from praise, we went to, what was the second word, Kirk, that was a prayer?
Prayer.
In fact, we're a couple, about three words away from jettisoning prayer, and then we're going to go to worship.
Worship.
And so prayer was 0410. And
we'll
be, yeah. Well, prayer, well, I'm jumping the gun. Prayer is currently 0-7, and praise was 0-10.
0-8, and we got two more to go, and then worship is only about three of them, and they're stunning, I think.
Yeah, they're stunning. The primary word translated, well, we won't jump the gun here. What we are doing is inverting the order of the show today for two reasons. One is because we can and because Kirk is available. And second is because IQ Arasuli lives in Europe, and it is far easier for him to call in during the second hour.
I was going to say,
right,
we can put the order anytime you want. It's not just a Friday thing. I will gladly.
That's true.
The second hour, those.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. We have said, Scott, yes, we can do whatever we wish to do. After all, if they the worst thing they can do is to dock our wages. And Kirk, it probably wouldn't change your lifestyle much, would it?
It only affects one of us, and I'm all right with it.
That's true. It only affects one of the three of us.
In that case, we'll stay the course.
Okay. All right. So where were we on the concept of prayer?
Well, we went through 7 to 8, and then one of them was a subset of another words. But after the 8th one, we've got the 9, and this one takes a little bit of I need to add a little something before we begin, because
okay,
this one is written with a GAN, and a GAN is not a letter that's normally in the 22. I don't know exactly what the history was, but I know it's old, but it's not that old. It's a rope.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a really an interesting story on the GAN, it was used as the first letter in Gomorrah.
Mm-hmm.
It may have been used in Goy, Gentile, to speak of heathens and pagans. It is a letter that was really only used to convey things that were not positive. You know, the rope could be a hangman's noose for all we know. But the actual, the figure eight that the letter is comprised by did have one positive connotation. And its history in the Hebrew alphabet is important. By the way, yeah, I know another one. So you've got Gomorrah. That says in Sodom and Gomorrah. That's not a good endorsement. And from a Hebrew situation, when you're reading the Torah, Goy and Goyim's not a not an endorsement either, because that was, you know, animalistic and heathen and pagan, and barbarian is the concept, ungodly, Torahless. But you know, there's a third word, and Hamas hangs out there, that was written with a GAN. Gaza.
Gaza, yeah.
Gaza. There was a Gaza city, a Gaza town, anyway, and it was also written with the GAN. Now, the positive part of the GAN is that it is drawn exactly like the numeral 8, and because Hebrews over time erased the letter from their language, and what they did is they still maintained 22 letters, but they did so by there's two letters that make the same sound. There's a sin and the shemek make exactly the same sound, and there's two T's.
Yes.
That make exactly the same sound. And so what they did is it's kind of like the Roman Catholic Church. You know, they everybody knew there were Ten Commandments. Well, the second commandment they had a tizzy fit over because they were all about making graven images. I mean, everywhere you turned, Mary, their crucifix, and then all of their saints. I mean, they were in the business of making graven images. And so they knew that if they published that, they would have a problem. So they eliminated the second statement that God carved in stone, and they cut the one about coveting. They broke it into two, so that you know you wouldn't covet your neighbor's wife, and you wouldn't covet their goat, sheep, and pigs. So it was pretty interesting in that regard. Yeah, whatever works. So the letter is it's important in history because what we call Arabic letters, they aren't Arabic letters. In fact, Arabic letters aren't even Arabic letters. No. You know the history of Arabic letters is really important, I think, in terms of this.
Well, I know that the Byzantines or the Christians were the one they wanted to. They kind of invented the written language.
The Syrian Christians are the ones that created written Arabic. That is true. Out of what language?
Out of Hebrew.
Out of Hebrew. It's a combination of Hebrew and Aramaic, and Hebrew and Aramaic are very, very similar. But they used the Hebrew alphabet and Hebrew vocabulary to create Arabic. So, you know, when the Quran claims that it's in pure Arabic or you don't understand Arabic, therefore you can't understand the Quran. Actually, what you need to understand the Quran,
Hebrew,
which is based upon, by the way, a Hebrew word. You ever heard of kara in Hebrew?
Mm-hmm.
Means to read, to recite, to invite, to summon. Well, Quran in Arabic means to read or to recite. Mm-hmm. Man, you know when old Muhammad was in the cave and he had the demonic spirit pester him and said read, and he says I can't read, you know, I'm illiterate. Well, then he said maybe he said recite because it's the same word, kara. Well, it's the Hebrew word for read and recite, kara. That's what Quran is named after. Well, so the Arabic numerals are really based on Hebrew letters, which went through a phase where every Hebrew letter in alphabetic order, with the gan being in the eighth space. And what symbol do we use today for the letter, for the numeral eight?
Well, it's the same. It's the same without the little rope ends on it, but
it's the infinity sign turned 90 degrees. What you find here is that each of the first eight letters in Hebrew, when the gan is put back into its original spot, all of them convey they are written exactly like what we call Arabic numerals today, in the right order. So they all have not only numeral shapes, but it's the numerals we use today. So it's a gan had a had an interesting place in Hebrew, and you know so many of these words we are presenting the bright positive side of, but there's words with negative connotations, and the gan was capable of conveying them, although it had one positive connotation. It spoke of when it's associated with something positive, it's associated with the eighth day, which is the symbol of infinity, even in Hebrew.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I don't know when to use it or when not to use it. I mean, there are words that are written with it, so I just translate them.
When do you use which one of the two T's? Like, you know, I think you can learn more about the word Torah when you consider what Torah means with both T's, since they both make the same sounds. And I'll do the same thing with the sin and the shemek. When I'm trying to research a word and come up with its meanings and its roots, I'll also look at words that are written with the same letters, but with the shemek versus the sen, or the sen versus the shemek, and also the two the tet and the ta and the two t's. It's the only way to in Hebrew there is a soft g, the gam, and then there's the gamma and this hard G, the drawn as the sign for infinity or eight.
Yeah. Well, this one was an interesting word in that it's the gan, and then it's the tau, and then it's the roach, and it's I'm assuming that it's pronounced something like guitar.
Guitar. Yeah, so you and Elvis Presley have your guitar.
Well, he plays a little better than me. But the it means to intercede by burning of incense. Now the trouble with that is it's not something you want to do.
Yahweh does talk about a sweet smell, and occasionally he will speak of an incense and associate with him, and he will occasionally use that concept. And it was almost always, though, the sweet aroma came from part of the process as you were consuming the inedible parts of the lamb, for example, but you're mixing it with olive oil and with all sorts of different spices. Mm-hmm. And then the words that he would use for sweet aroma was a derivation of ruach.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was that you were trying to associate this idea that the spirit brings us up to and introduces us, provides a means for us to be in Yahweh's presence so we can rise up to heaven, is the symbolism when Yahweh uses it. But there is a dark side of incense and of religious individuals playing the role of intercessors.
Mm-hmm.
How much is that popular in, for example, in Roman Catholicism?
Oh, tremendously.
Incense burned
all
the time. Yeah, particularly around their little statues of Mary. And don't the priests say that they are intercessors, that their confession to them is works, and that their church holds the keys to heaven?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it sure fits the religious concept, then, of you better pray to me, or, you know, you better pray that we hold the keys to heaven. So if we tell you to pray, you better pray, because we are going to play the role of intercessor. And go over there and you burn that incense. So it's a highly religious concept when you look at it from the original Gan perspective. Welcome back to Shattering Mystery. We're having a conversation with Kirk. For those of you who love the detail, who are fond of observation, this is a program where we're digging into the detail. I'm sure that the history of Hebrew and Aramaic. Aramaic and also lost letters and found letters and all that sort of thing. You know, it's a lot of detail for some people, but for others, you can tell in the tone of our voice, this is the fun part.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, this is the fun stuff you're learning. And it's not like we're learning here how to drive a race car. I'm sure that's fun. I don't know how to drive a race car, but I'm sure that's fun. We're actually learning about the creation of the universe and the very letters that comprise the words that were used to conceive not only the universe, but life.
Mm-hmm.
I find that really, what could you study to be more interesting, more pertinent, more beneficial than that?
When you put it that way, it's nothing.
Nothing. All right, so let's talk about this word.
Two things I wanted to say, though. But I mean, the second thing we'll talk about the letters themselves.
Okay.
But the secondary meaning was dark.
Mm. That's the by the way, the overall connotation of the letter. The letter has a dark history. I think the reason that the Israelite community eliminated the letter over time and then replicated the T's and the soft S's is because the letter had a dark connotation and it was used in a negative sense regarding them, and they just simply eliminated the letter.
But now
it would be the letter, by the way, it would be the letter that would have the closest sound to the J that we use today. So Jew, Jesus, Jerusalem, all of the J sounds that we use to today, the closest Hebrew letter to those sounds would have been the gan. Now, as you know, none of those words are written with a J in Hebrew. They're written with a yod in Hebrew, and they don't convey that sound at all. But the corruption has returned to the sound of the gan, which was the dark word in Hebrew. I don't think that's by coincidence.
No, probably not. I mean, that's too close to home.
Yeah, and that's, by the way, that's man's corruption. That's not God. God didn't name Yisrael with a J, with a gan, with a hard G sound. He didn't do that. He didn't name himself using that letter. It's man that has changed his name from Yahweh to Jehovah, for example, with that J sound, which would be akin to the closest letter, anyway, akin to the sound of the gan in, in Hebrew.
But now, this is not a letter in the 119th Psalm that Dode used. Is it? Anybody passes you on God?
You know, I remember thinking this through, and I think the answer is yes. But I'm, you know, I wrote that 4 years ago, and so you asked me a question that I can't give you an honest answer. I know I explored it in the 119th Psalm, and I don't know what the conclusion was. So I don't know.
Well, I was just trying to figure the date when it started to disappear.
The reason that your question is so appropriate is that the Psalm, 119th Psalm, is in alphabetic order, and it goes to the 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet.
Mm-hmm.
And my recollection is that it doesn't have both a sin and a shin. So if you eliminate the sin and sin or the shin, because the sin and the shemek are the same, you have room for the gan. And it is all 22 letters in alphabetic order. And so I do think that was the place where I learned about the history of the gan.
Okay.
So that's my recollection. That doesn't mean that I would.
Yeah.
Y'all ought to check that out for yourselves.
Okay. The letters, of course, with the gan, and now the gan is used, it says it means the same thing as an A or ain. So you could, you have a tau, of course, which is a signpost, or, so you could say so much, and the roach, of course, is a person who's,
right.
Observing. So, I mean, it could just simply mean, in this context, it could have meant, to be thoughtful, you know, to look at the signpost or look at the,
right. And you'll exist forever.
And be thoughtful and understand.
Right. Almost every Hebrew word has a dark and a light side.
Mm-hmm.
Because Hebrew was written as a volitional language for the express purpose of choice regarding a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the positive, the light side of the word would be a person who is observant, paying attention, looking at what God said, listening to what God said, thinking about what God said, is going to see the signposts along the way to everlasting life that he presented. That's what the letters say from the positive perspective. Welcome back to Shattering Mess. It's not pertinent to what this discussion, but my, I wish we were actually live and broadcasting the conversation that Scott and I had over the shooting and outside of Charleston. But there'll be time for that on Monday, and we'll do that on Monday. So there's a positive connotation of the word, Kirk, but the positive connotation we'll use the southern slang for guitar, is that those who are observant, who pay attention to what Yahweh said, who read what he wrote, which would be the eyes, who listen to what he has to say, which is the ears, who think about it, which is the brain at the top of our head, and pay attention to the signposts that he has, the TS in Hebrew, that he has posted along the way, will exist forever. But, you know, they're not the only billboards out there, are they?
No.
Man has a lot of billboards. We were talking about them yesterday, all the billboards to human gods in the sense of Mao Zedong,
mm-hmm.
Lenin, Marx, and even in America's Mall to George Washington, where you have the obelisk and Abraham Lincoln and we've turned our forefathers into saints, yeah, into gods. Gods of American liberty and patriotism. And their statements are all over their shrines. They're actually called shrines. And so there are other billboards. Churches advertise by them. You drive through the Bible Belt, man, and every third billboard is some idiot church trying to tell us how Jesus saves.
Jesus saves.
Yeah, and so, yeah, there's lots of other signposts that you can pay attention to that will also cause you to be eternal in the dark sense.
Dark sense, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But no matter which way you look at it, the dark sense or the bright perspective, there is no connotation here that would convey the concept of prayer, is there?
No, and let me go back to the first statement. If Yosha said go into the closet and pray, you ain't going to burn something in the closet and choke yourself to death. I mean,
no, and if you went into the closet, would you be capable in the closet to read?
No.
Who are you going to listen to in the closet?
Okay.
You yourself, right? So no,
yeah.
No. There is no way you're observing the signposts along the way in the closet. So this has nothing to do with prayer.
No.
All right. So we're 0 for 9.
Yeah, we're 0 for 9, and this is our last chance to have a prayer meeting.
Okay.
I don't hold up a lot of hope for this one either. So we have a this one only appears about 5 times, and it's a Lahasha. I think it's a lamb, the chest, and a shin, as
okay.
it simply means the first primary meaning is whisper.
Mm-hmm.
Second one is quiet. Well, that's fine. Okay. I mean, we use the word whisper a lot, and you tell your children to be quiet. But
yeah.
In context of you can't very well pray if you're going to be quiet, and probably can't be heard if you
But you can in one sense.
Okay.
You know, I've said something that I used to get some significant pushback on this, and one of two things has happened. Either by presenting the perspective that Yahweh has on this enough times,
mm-hmm.
or that the people who are pushing back are now, okay, yeah, that makes some sense. Or the people who have a different view on this have just left our company and are no longer listening to the show. One of the two.
But I'm out of here.
I have said lots of times that I don't spend a lot of time yabbering to God. And I've said lots of times that Yahweh makes it really clear that those who yabber to him, who aren't Torah observant, he thinks they're an abomination, doesn't listen to
them,
has no interest in whatsoever. So the concept of prayer where you're yabbering to God is a no-go. And even Yosha says, why are you bothering to do it? You know, if you're a child of the covenant, God knows what you need. Why are you doing this? And so I came to the conclusion that based upon Yahweh's own presentation, that he has a gazillions of times, a gazillion might be a slight exaggeration, but not since Hebrew is an infinite language in time, where he encourages us to be observant, which is to read what he has to say so that we can come to know. He tells us to, that's Shamar, he tells us another gazillion times to listen to what he has to say, that's Shama. So that we can know what he has to say. And he even uses, in his 7 most important days of the year, the Mikra, which is based upon the Hebrew verb kara. Well, kara does mean invitation, but it also means to read and recite. So even his invitations are named after read and recite. So he's fairly consistent in telling us we ought to be listening to him.
Yeah.
Can you be listening to him if you're yabbering?
No.
Who do you think has more pertinent things to say, Kirk or Yahweh?
Well, come on.
So, if you're whispering, if you're being quiet, is there a chance maybe that in your relationship with Yahweh, you're listening to him because you're being quiet so that you can listen to him?
Well, that. We can get a positive side out of it if you approach it that way, sure.
Absolutely. But is listening to God, does that have any correlation whatsoever to the Christian concept of prayer?
No connotation like that at all in Christian.
No, and even in the Islamic side where you recite the some stupid statement where you're yabbering or some religious person is yabbering. public prayer, you're everybody's yabbering. When I communicate with Yama, most of the communication is when I'm studying his words. And it's far more than reading and thinking about the words. It's the communication that flows out of those words that is the most enjoyable part of the process. But if I'm stuck on a word, I don't go to Yama and say, okay, yeah, you know, here's the basis of the word. Here's, you know, I'm not yabbering at him. He knows what word I'm focused on, and I'm quiet there for a while. Just quiet. And that's when I come to understand what the word means. That's when I get a clue that says, look here, and you'll understand what this word means. You just listen. So that's a positive thing, is to listen to Yahweh, right?
Oh, absolutely.
But it has nothing to do with prayer.
No, it's nothing along the lines of where we were going, trying to go with prayer. It's just saying, yeah, it doesn't exist there.
So it's 0 for 10, and the most common word for prayer, which is a pay, lamed, lamed.
Yeah.
Or derivation of pay, lamed, lamed.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go over that one again, because it's the one that's most often translated prayer. And how many times is a derivation of a pay, lamed, lamed used in the Torah? Do you know, remember this one?
Well, I have at least 84, and variations of it is.
No, that's the Torah prophets and Psalms.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then you said
that's every time. That's every book in Hebrew in the Torah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The answer is six.
Six.
What's the number of man?
Six.
How many times is prayer attributed to God in the Torah, and how many times is prayer attributed to man in the Torah?
I don't think it's
never attributed to God. All six times to man. Okay. Number of man is six. Man prays.
Yeah.
Man prays. God does not endorse it. There isn't one statement in the entire Torah where Yahweh is encouraging us to pray, asking us to pray, telling us that prayer is part of participating in the covenant, that prayer is part of our salvation, that prayer is something that we do when we're attending his invitations to meet seven times a year. There isn't even a place in the Torah where he says prayer is really good. Boy, I just love it when you pray to me. Never once. Six times it's attributed to man as part of human behavior. Six is the number of man. That is definitive for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we do look at the word PLL and try to attribute some assimilation to Yahweh, what we have is the pay, which is the spoken word. And it's an open mouth. So it's the spoken word of God. And those who listen, the lamed is the shepherd's staff, and it means to approach in Hebrew, lamed does. So, to approach the shepherd, listen to his words.
Mm-hmm. That's what the word means, and the translation is not so, but that's
correct.
How to get judgment out of that, I don't know, but...
Yeah, that would be that they call it a plea for intercession and our plea and then judgment. A plea and then judgment, and that would be, please judge me.
not smart.
Not smart, no. All right, so we were 0 for 8, 0 for 10, and now we're moving on to worship.
And
you know, I still get letters from people saying that, you know, there's a couple of places where it appears that that God wants to be worshipped. You know, you bad guy telling us that God doesn't want to be worshipped. You know what most of the people do know that write me in this regard? They don't attack me for being the bad guy that says that God doesn't want to be worshipped. They attack Larry. So, Larry, because Larry says it. But I was going to say I agree with Larry, but it really is the fact of the matter is both Larry and I agree with Yahweh, so we're
so that's a good company.
So we figure that works for us. All right, let's talk about how many words did you find in Hebrew that were rendered worship?
Well, we got three words that are translated in the modern Christian Bibles from the King James on that where they use worship, and they're strange words. When I looked them up, first one was kind of a shaw. It is a the teeth and the chit, the what am I trying to say? The is the word means in its primary meaning means to sink, pit, low, or to bow. And the long version would be a pit dug into the ground for the purpose of trapping someone to go down or sink down into a pit.
Well, that's not good.
172 times.
Wow. To sink into a pit.
Sink into
a pit. And we think that that is what... So you've got an Ob Father who has created a covenant for the express purpose of perfecting his children, making them immortal, empowering and enriching them by himself making the sacrifice to get down on his knees to lift his children up. And that what the religious think is that that same God, after he's done all of that, wants his children to sink down into a pit. Well, how much sense does that make?
Like I say, once you know what he wants, then you just laugh at this stuff.
Yes, it is. It's laughable. Welcome back to Shattering Mystery. Talking about words that are used for worship, and the first one's primary connotation is to sink down into a pit. Now, if you, Kirk, were to spend your time in a Roman Catholic or Protestant church or a Islamic mosque, what would you be doing to your soul?
Be losing it.
Yeah, you'd be essentially having your...
Yeah.
If particularly if you were advocating for them, you would be assuring that your soul's sunk down into a pit. Now, your soul... for eternity, if you're advocating for them, but you're essentially damning your soul to death by slithering into one of these churches or mosques or shrines or the like. So there really is a religious connotation associated with the word, but not in the sense that the religions want.
While we were talking, I kind of flashed on. All of a sudden, I said, "Well, you know, Darren, here's obvious. Gideon jumped into a pit to hide, and Yahweh helped him get out of the pit."
Yeah, Yahweh is in the business of retrieving us from darkness and from the pit and from death. The pit, in Hebrew, conveys hell, which is Sheol. It conveys death. It conveys darkness. It conveys confinement or imprisonment. Those are, you know, Yahusha was put in a pit. I've actually been in that pit in Jerusalem while the chief priest, after the chief priest drudged him before he was became the Passover lamb. You know, dark pits and pits, you know, like a grave in the ground. Those are the four connotations of a pit. And Yahweh was in the business of liberating us from enslavement, from shining his light upon us, which eliminates us from darkness, from providing the means for us to live forever as opposed to die, and release from Sheol so that we can spend time with him in heaven. So Yahweh is in the business of freeing us from those things, which means he's in the business of freeing us from religion.
Now, there's one other little variation I found, too, to the word where they use the shin, the chit, and then they use the hay. And the definition they use for that is to pay homage to another by bowing down or getting on your knees with your face on the ground.
Okay, well, yeah.
That's a worship of a king, but it ain't a worship of Yahweh.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Absolutely true.
The letters don't mean that.
Yeah, and you know, there are, and this may be the word, in fact, I think it is the word, that if you were to open up your Strong's to the definition of that word, you've shared it. However, what you haven't shared is the word written, and I don't know if it's right above it or right below it, that's spelled exactly the same way, just not the same diacritical marks. Did Yahweh put the diacritical marks on his letters?
Rabbi.
That's a rabbi thing. So the word written with exactly the same three letters means to acknowledge, to respond, to provide testimony on behalf of what you have seen. now, in the context of Yahweh, is to respond, to acknowledge, to provide testimony on behalf of what you have seen. Is that appropriate?
That would be very appropriate.
Yeah. And so the word written exactly the same way, using exactly the same letters, means to acknowledge, to respond, and to provide testimony regarding what you have seen. So when it's pertaining to Yahweh, which one of those two meanings of the letters written exactly the same way do you think is intended?
I'll take the latter.
Yes, and what do we say about Hebrew words, that they all have a dark and light side?
They have a dark and light side, uh-huh.
And so if you are instead paying, providing testimony to what you have witnessed in a church, or in a synagogue, or in a mosque, then you're going to get the dark side of the word. You're going to slip into the pit and die.
Yeah, so this is not a place for worship service. Don't do it.
Nope. Nope.
Don't do it.
No. And so the answer to this variation that is translated worship, where you do have to change to get it to being bow on your, get on your knees to pay homage, you have to change the last letter to a hey to accomplish that. But when you do that, now you're with a word that has exactly the same letters to say, to acknowledge, to respond, to provide testimony to what you have witnessed. That's powerful, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So we've gone from a bad thing to a good thing. But, Kirk, does that good thing have anything to do with worship?
Not at all.
Not at all. And when it's associated with worship, it's a really bad thing.
Yeah,
I was consistent. And so are you, my friend. Look forward to being with you this evening on Yada Yah Radio.
Okay.